Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joined October of 2024. Well, let's check. There's only 9 days in the month. So he's created that account pretty recently. No one he's following, followed by 415 people, 54 posts. So,
is he tweeting about Hurricane Milton and things of that nature?
No, he's not. First tweet. He's replying to tweets, this Michael Brewerly. First tweet, October 7th. Okay?
About George Pickens?
It's a response. It is some guy named Ben Slotnick posting a video of Pickens grabbing Jordan Lewis's face mask and twisting him down. George Pickens should be suspended a game for this. It's absolutely unnecessary. Michael Brewerly, October 7th, 4:25 p.m. That would be what, Pony? Monday afternoon?
Yeah.
Shut your lame ass up. Next. Jordan Lewis on his way to the locker. Pittsburgh need a receiver. George Pickens weak. That's from Bobby Belt in Texas. I guess the Cowboys actually covers the Cowboys for 105.3 The Fan down there. Michael Brewerly. Brutta got slammed on his head. Okay, let's keep going. Give him some snaps. Maybe he'll try. Watch the tape. He was open the whole night. Oh, no, this is all in response to you. Here we go. Martavis Bryant traded for behavioral issues. Antonio Brown traded for behavioral issues. Chase Claypool traded for behavioral issues.
Yeah, that is my tweet.
Yeah, it's you. George Pickens, .. I'm sensing a pattern here. One issue, so misunderstood, man. Yo, lame ass, don't know, bleep. That's in response to you.
But you also need to point
one
something out.
One issue is what his Instagram feed is.
And he's the only person on planet Earth who calls himself that.
Correct. Watch the tape. He was open the whole night. Give him some snaps and maybe he'll try. That seems to suggest, by the way, that the lack of snaps was not to get the most out of George, that it was a punishment. Another Pony tweet. George Pickens is acting like a petulant baby, and the way the Steelers have tried to get the most out of him has failed miserably. Both can be true. Michael Brewerly, go band for band with him then, which is money. Compare your money.
He's got me beat there.
He does. Here we go some more. All Steelers. George Pickens is back in Mike Tomlin's doghouse, and it's just a nice little graphic. Craig would love it if somebody on our station made a nice graphic like this. Content. Free one issue or get him another wide receiver. One issue need a wide receiver too beside him, man.
Do we have the Faribault one?
Open bleeping always. Hold on, we'll get there. Last one. Open bleeping always from Barstool Sports. Pickens' eye black looks like the sign in front of IHOP. Michael Brewerly, it's still a valid message. Brutta was open all night. All right, so there's a bunch. He responded to you again telling you you don't know bleep. He needs help. Lames like you just need to hop off of media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so there's a bunch more right now.
Yes, but where's the Faribault?
Hold on, there's one about Kenny Pickett, maybe 14, just misses his 8, and said, and he responded, nobody will ever mention this, and he def doesn't miss 8, though.
Of course you love that one.
I do think that one's funny. Anyway, so Faribault is up there. There's a picture, randomly, of Nick Faribault.
Who's a guy that looked like Donnie before a week in 180, but with a man bun. Is that a fair description, Donnie, or do you think that's mean?
No, I'd say
he's a big
fair.
Guy. And he's got like a very, he's got kind of like, isn't this what Big Cat wears in that one like commercial where he's on Barstool where he's wearing the dark glasses and he looks at the camera all funny. He's wearing a turtleneck and a blazer.
He's got a husky build.
Right.
I like that.
But he had responded,
like
Michael Brewerly had responded to a Faribault tweet earlier, and I won't go into that. Then he just tweeted out, if you built like this, yo, athletic opinion don't matter. And then the little 100 emoji, and it's just a picture of Faribault.
There's plenty of offensive linemen who are built like him. So does their opinion not matter? Is Isaac Seumalo's opinion not matter?
I think because those guys could all beat George up, presumably, because they're literal NFL players, he probably wouldn't say that. Jared Kane. Interesting one here, Pony. It's time for wide receiver to be Devontae Adams to become a Pittsburgh Steeler. Like and retweet if yins agree. Who reposts it?
Let me guess.
Michael Brewerly.
Michael Brewerly.
He wants Devontae Adams. I got bad news. Michael, if you think one issue needs a wide receiver two, one issue is about to become two issue, as in wide receiver two issue. Because Devontae Adams ain't coming here to play second fiddle.
Donnie, do you think that this is his burner? Put your detective hat on like Malzi.
If I had to guess, I would say yes. It does.
It feels like a...
I mean, if not, it's like a phenomenal job by somebody else to make it seem like his burner.
Aaron Becker, Justin Fields to Pickens on a practice route. Hitting, you know, nice catch by Pickens, and he looks like he's going pretty much full speed. Doesn't look lazy to me. What is it? Here's why I think it is him. And it's just
the
my
only
opinion.
Human on social media that's defending those plays.
What is the thing Cabali tells us about Pickens all the time?
Smarter than you think.
Very sharp guy.
Smart like a fox.
Doesn't like to say a lot. Is moody, but very, very smart guy. Cabali has taken pains. In terms of, like, other than having no restraint and only commenting on George Pickens things, which is what a George Pickens burner would do, nothing about a blank account named Michael Brewerly would otherwise lead you back. So a pretty sharp person came up with this.
Something else to, I think, pay attention to. You have to see when he tweets or retweets.
Yep.
Because it shouldn't line up when
practice
is happening or a game is
going
right. on. Now, that could create another layer. I mean, if he's tweeting, like, during games, then we got to start to question, does he have somebody else in on it, or is it somebody else altogether?
Donnie, all the tweets have started, the earliest tweet in his entire 56-tweet history is at 4:25. And so you'd have to go, is he tweeting during practice? No, he's not. He's waiting till these little pictures come out.
Oh, man. I think we got something here. Who's the
redemption
guy
game about to go crazy, says some guy, and he retweets it.
Who is the person that first was keen to this? Who
some random TikToker.
Do we know who the person is on TikTok?
No, I don't. I'd like to give him credit. Because like any great detective, Detective Mulsey works off of tips from the community. You know, I'm trying to piece things together. Donnie, I hope you especially liked me on the fly reworking the Law and Order actual spoken intro to be sports talk related.
That was well done.
That was for you, brother.
So he's reached the point in the relationship with the team and with fans where he's created an account.
The weird thing about
allegedly to stick up for
if
himself.
If you believe it's Pickens, I will say the weird thing about it is a lot of the tweets still seem like a guy who's not like pissed so much at the team and wants to be traded or anything, because he responded to a Devontae for Pickens straight up thing now saying, now y'all just making bleep up. He doesn't sound like a guy checked out on the team. He definitely sounds like a guy very frustrated by his role. Not a guy like saying, trade me, get me help is basically it.
And what
it.
Did Faribault do to get in his crosshairs?
I think Faribault just sent out a tweet and he just didn't like it.
Michael Brewerly. What is the, if you Google or search Michael Brewerly.
Yeah.
Is there any?
Here's another one. George Pickens,
with that name.
George Pickens ain't going anywhere. And it's like a Schefter video. Michael Brewerly never was.
Let's see here if Michael Brewer.
You know, it
is
came up for me.
Person.
Mike's Beer Bar.
Yeah, me too.
He's also seemingly predicting a huge bounce back game next week because he's like citing the Browns game last year.
Fans suspect yet another disgruntled NFL player is Michael Brewerly. Sir, another burner account has hit the AFC North, and his name is Michael Brewerly.
Is that the George Bush one? Is that somebody whispering in George W.?
Suspicious NFL fans are saying the same thing. They believe that George Pickens is Michael Brewerly.
It's weird, though, because he's like taking time to like, there's a tweet about Deshaun Elliott being really good, generally, and it said, the Joker, love the way he brings it, and he's been a dog this year.
If you started a
marathon, not a race, tweets Michael Brewerly.
If I were a...
Hold on, the best one. One issue needs his Robin, and it's a gif of Batman and Robin from an animated series just nodding in the Batmobile.
It feels like these guys want to get caught, because they only tweet about one thing. If I started a burner account responding to people, I'd mix in things that had nothing to do with just the topic that I wanted to argue with people on or stick up for myself on. I'd sprinkle in other things that had nothing to do with criticisms of me to throw people off the scent, to make it seem like I had more than just the agenda of wanting to make sure that people stopped crap talking me in this situation. But when all you do is comment on things about George Pickens and you call yourself...
How about
like,
this one?
How like about Russell Wilson? You call yourself the nickname you gave yourself.
How about this one, though? He's trying to do a throw you off the scent with the third person. One of the tweets just says, can't wait to see GP back out there on Sunday. So he is trying to throw you off the scent.
By referring to himself, in the third person.
Yeah, like making it seem like he just tossed that one in the middle of it. What do you think about that?
He might call himself GP. He might be like a Ricky Henderson type.
I think it's more he's trying to, hey, no, I can't wait. I'm just a huge George Pickens fan. You know who he's got to go to? Durant. Kevin Durant, the king of the burner account. The undisputed champion of burners. And then Durant would just eventually say, screw the burner. I'll just troll people directly to their faces.
Didn't he get caught because he thought he was on his burner, and then he ended up just responding to people from his own Twitter?
I mean,
I think he might have liked the tweet that was on his own Twitter.
Can I be honest here with you boys? I find this, there might be people who are getting genuinely jammed up about this. I find this extremely funny.
Batco texted me to remind me there was, for a minute, like a potential burner Matt Canada account last year.
Oh, yeah.
But it was found out it was just some random guy.
No, this is my guess. I'm not saying it is George Pickens, especially if I'm right, though, and it is. Very funny. He's not really, like, the Faribault thing's a little out of bounds. I like little Nick
Faribault.
It's
not like when Santonio Holmes went on Twitter and told someone to kill themselves.
Yes, he's just, in fact, the meanest stuff he said was probably to you, Pony, other than Faribault, and that's kind of par for the course.
Yeah.
The rest of it's sort of pro-team, and don't worry, I'll be good.
The only real criticism I have of it is, why do these things should not matter to you? What I say, what Nick Faribault says, what anonymous people on social media say, has no impact on you whatsoever. This goes back to, for an athlete, you keep the main thing. Be good at your job. Focus on that. Actually, run hard so these things don't get out there on social media.
Faribault was even tweeting earlier that George and Pat need more targets, and he first gave him a 100 response. That Kevin Adams guy was being responded to.
Mm.
He's been busy on social.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tough times. It's time for All Access with Aditi. NFL on CBS. She has the Colts and Titans on Sunday, brought to you by Bet365. She had Steelers-Colts. She had Steelers-Broncos. And when we had Aditi on after that Week 2 game, one of her sideline nuggets was the way that Steelers players would go up to George Pickens and keep him engaged and reassure him and cheer him up if there was a drive where he didn't get the ball. And she described a very conscious effort by Steelers players to keep him motivated and keep him in good spirits. Well, I think we learned and found out why Sunday night against Dallas and everything we've seen since, the eye black script, the lack of effort on plays, Tomlin running interference and saying it was a load management thing, which was complete poppycock. And Aditi joins us right now. Aditi, you've seen this movie before. Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool. It feels like we're going through it again with George Pickens.
Maybe, but I would say this about Antonio Brown. He always gave every effort.
Yes, Chris has pointed out too. Other than maybe like a play here or there, it was never as bad as it was with Pickens.
No, Antonio Brown would run over his mom if it meant getting in the end zone. I've always hated
analogies like that, but I totally get what you're saying.
He drops.
Throw grandma under the bus. People say that.
I think of a different one.
Wrong. I disagree, Aditi. I like that because it conveys the seriousness with which he wanted to win. I like it. Yes. He drop kicked a punter in the face once on a return.
True.
I mean, there's just, yes. What's frustrating, and look, there are mercurial players. We all have some quirks to us. None of us are perfect. And if we have a team around us, if we have teammates around us, if we have a coach around us who are willing to work with our quirks, okay, then so be it. I think what's sort of more difficult to forgive is the effort issue. And when you're not blocking, when a block would let Jalen Warren into the touchdown, well then you're not helping the team right there. If anything, you're harming the team. When you are going out of your way to be distracting in some way to create a distraction, like with the eye black, how are you helping your team? How is that bettering the cause? I think that that's the really difficult piece here.
Also, how does it go ignored by the coaches or not told, hey, take that off your face?
We've said this from the beginning. There are certain things that you put up with from certain people because of the production that they give you. And sure, we've seen games where George Pickens has had 100 yards, but we've seen a lot of games where he hasn't.
Like the fumble he had in the game you worked where he was holding that ball like a loaf of bread and cost his team points.
And so, again, I think that Mike Tomlin is always sort of doing the balancing act. It's, you know, how much are you worth? And we know that this is sort of the indication with Antonio Brown, that you put up with certain things until the production dips or the distraction becomes too great, and then you move on. And I think George Pickens needs to recognize right now his potential, sure, is through the roof. He's got all of the potential in the world. He could indeed potentially become, I keep using that word, potential, could indeed one day become a game breaker, but he's just not there right now.
Aditi, I wanted to ask you about not just Pickens, but also one other receiver, just because I happened to see this come down from Mark Caballi. He just kind of put two and two together. Like, one of the big complaints is there's nobody else to take attention away from Pickens. Roman Wilson was the 84th pick in the draft. He was a full participant today for his ninth consecutive practice, but they haven't played him in a game yet. And then Mark pointed out that Brandon Johnson got called up and made a catch in that game last week from the practice squad, but that he played zero special team snaps, which would usually be that they're like their dodge for that, right? Well, he's a special teamer. What do you think is going on with Roman Wilson, where a practice squad guy got called up and didn't even play special teams, just seemingly was preferred by the coaching staff over a third-round pick?
I don't know enough about that to speculate. Are we sure that Roman Wilson is entirely healthy?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, full participant for nine straight practices.
That we know.
You know, it's interesting because I can tell you that the Broncos, who we had week one and week two, had two rookie receivers. And for some reason, the late round pick was active before the higher round pick was. You know, sort of the higher round pick was a healthy scratch. And in talking to members of that coaching staff, there was the feeling that the higher round pick did indeed have the higher ceiling, just maybe needed a little bit more time to come along. And maybe one of those guys that wouldn't be active right away, but when he came on would be a man of fire. And that made me think of Martavis Bryant. And so again, this is, it's speculation,
sure,
but it's not necessarily a death knell. This doesn't necessarily mean that, okay, Roman Wilson is not what they expected or isn't who they thought he was.
Aditi, let me ask you a question then, just based on one other thing I can think of that might be a mitigating circumstance. Just in your experience covering the Steelers, how much do they value a player just having played in NFL games before? Because Johnson did play for the Broncos and actually had a couple touchdown catches last year. Like, how much of a factor is that usually for Tomlin when he's talking about who to elevate or who to count on in a pinch, basically?
I think that matters a lot. And you look at what happens, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit, you know, the end of that Colts game and Mason McCormick, and did he tap, you know, whatever the tapping of Zach Frazier was for the snap on the silent count. You know, those are big moments, and until you've lived them, you don't really know what someone's going to do when the lights are on. It's a line that Mike Tomlin used with us about Justin Fields, that the more he's seen him in big moments, the greater he feels about him. It's finally actually witnessing it up close. And there's certainly a level of comfort with Mike Tomlin for guys that have been in those moments, that have been in those stadiums, have been there when the lights are on.
So I'm happy that you just brought up Fields, because I did want to get to what's going to go on Sunday. We just had Florio on, and he said, oh yeah, Wilson's going to start if he was a full participant today. Which I think contradicts what Tomlin said yesterday about Wilson working with the first team, or Wilson working with the second team at practice today, and a field still being prepped to start. But most NFL people I know who saw it thought that what Melissa Stark reported on Sunday night with Wilson was a sign that something got said in a production meeting that made her think and that team think that Wilson was going to play this game on Sunday. You're in these production meetings. Do you think something like that could have actually gotten said that made her report that, Aditi?
I think it's not just her. You know, we heard Chris Collinsworth say that as well when he was, I think the way, and I'm paraphrasing here, so please forgive me, but I think the way that I heard him say it was that if you're rebuilding, then Justin Fields is an option. But if you're really trying to win right now, Russell Wilson has won a Super Bowl. Do you recall what
yes,
I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're like, you have the exact quote right, but it's close enough where I agree with you.
Yeah, something along those lines is what he had said. And again, please, everyone forgive me. I'm not quoting him directly. But the feeling that I got in saying that is that he clearly is saying he thinks the Steelers go further with Russell Wilson. I can only imagine that he came away feeling that way and Melissa came away feeling that way because of what was said in those meetings. Now, I can tell you this. I know that from the very beginning, one of the first things that Arthur Smith had said to us is that his number one goal was to make Justin Fields more confident. And I know that when we talked to Mike Tomlin week two and then again week four, Justin Fields' confidence was a piece of that. I would counter that with, the guy has been in a completely dysfunctional situation for a few years. He's finally here. He's getting some footing, but you're not fully cutting him loose. You're not letting him do everything that he possibly can. And you're never vouching that, yeah, he's doing a great job and he's going to hold on to this job. So confidence is such a tenuous thing. Justin Fields has said all the right things. Justin Fields has said that he doesn't want to give up the position, that he's, of course, going to do what the coaches ask of him, that he's getting rid of the ball so quickly because he knows he has to let the other guys like Najee Harris and George Pickens do the work for him, all of that. But by the same token, how confident can you be if you're kind of just waiting for another guy to get healthy? How confident can you be if your head coach is never saying, yep, you're doing enough to make this a conversation again? All your head coach is essentially saying is, well, it's not a conversation worth having because the other guy isn't healthy.
So reading tea leaves, it sounds like you, based on what you heard from them, you're starting to think Russell Wilson will probably play on Sunday too.
I mean, I'll tell you that hearing Chris Collinsworth and Melissa Stark, and I will say that, you know, obviously, I think you know this, that Melissa and I are extremely good friends and had conversation before and after the game and mm-hmm. you know, talk about things that we think are storylines. I will tell you from conversations that I had week four, I find it a bit surprising. I talked to several members of the staff who felt very strongly about Justin and what he's doing and how he's playing within the offense and how he's growing and the potential that he has and the teammate that he is and all of those things. But by the same token, look, this Steelers offense, on the one hand, Mike Tomlin wants it to be ugly, but on the other hand, it's not giving you the explosives. It's not giving you the dynamic plays that you know you need. So you promised Russell Wilson the starting spot when he signed, or in order to effort his signing. Then all during training camp, you continued to say he was in the pole position. Your takeaway from camp was that, yes, Justin Fields made it debatable, but he didn't by any means run away with the job. He just made it debatable. And if it was going to be debatable, then the guy that was in pole position with the more experience and who had been promised the starting spot was going to get to start. And so now Justin Fields has played well, but he has not set the world on fire. So I think it's very fair that Mike Tomlin wants to see what he has in Russell Wilson. There's a reason, whatever the reason was, there's a reason that he promised him the starting job when, quite frankly, Kenny Pickett was still on his roster, and 2 weeks prior, he had told Kenny Pickett, we're going to do everything to support you better than we have since you've been here.
Aditi, you have Tennessee and Indianapolis. Say hi to Mason Rudolph for us on Sunday.
Well, you know, I was really, really hoping that I was going to get to see Mason, but it sure sounds like Brian Callahan's going to go with Will Levis.
You'll see Mason by about the early second quarter, Aditi.
You know, I saw Andy Dalton. I saw Joe Flacco. I figured I was due. I saw Andy Dalton engineer a win. I saw Joe Flacco engineer a win. I thought it was time to see another one of my old AFC North friends engineer a win.
Aditi, I'm going to tell you this about Levis. He's obviously a phenomenal athlete. Some of the turnovers he has committed this year, if you grafted me into that situation, I would have done essentially the same thing he did, just like whipping the ball over my head blindly. Like, it's ugly. I don't know how they can start him for more than another game.
Well,
it ain't good.
Enjoy it, Aditi. We'll talk again next week.
We'll report back to you next week.
See ya. Time for the Donnie Football Debrief. It is brought to you by Steel Mill Saloon in Mount Washington. Don?
The Debrief, October 9, 2024. A little bit of a two-parter today. The first one...
A double barrel action, if you will, Malsy.
Risky move by you because you know how this tends to go. You might never see part two. I'm already throwing you off.
The first one, just sort of a little headline here. I don't know. What would you even want to call that?
Not
a headline.
A blurb.
Yeah. A couple of weeks after I asked Landon Roberts about PFF grades and he just completely slandered them.
Yes.
Highest graded player in the National Football League in week five.
Landon Roberts.
93.8.
I mean, I would imagine the play he made on...
would they give him there, like 110?
Second down. It's got to be considered one of the best plays in football history by PFF.
And, you know, you just, again, load management. When you've got Rico Dowdle running the ball 5 or 6 yards a carry and these long drives, when you can get a Landon Roberts arrest and make sure Patrick Queen's out there for every play...
He's our green dot guy.
And Peyton Wilson's out there, you go ahead and do that. So I don't have the exact snap number. But
he had, like he had 21 snaps, 9 run defense snaps, 12 coverage snaps.
I mean, what are you doing there? Are we not allowed to take Patrick Queen off the field no matter what?
When
no
Roberts
one else
got,
can get the plays?
When Roberts got here, one of the things they said they loved about him was his ability to communicate on the field. I vividly remember them saying that.
Dulac, another one of his gems today in his chat. I hate to just go after Jerry because he's venerable and he's been here a long
time. Was it him going after people, though?
No, today he said Patrick Queen playing fine. In his
based on what?
Yes, I don't know. I'm not even citing PFF grades here.
Is $13 million a year good enough to be? Is fine good enough when you're paying a guy eight figures?
You are watching Donnie from a spot in the crowd where you can see the whole field. Are you seeing great linebacker play from Queen? Are you seeing good linebacker play from Queen? Are you even seeing average linebacker play from Queen? Are we seeing a guy that looks more like the John Bosticks? And Sean Spence's and Miles Jack's.
I think I'd put him over that.
How about Mark Barron?
Mark Barron.
I'd put him over that group for sure, but I think we have the price tag in our head too when he's playing at the level he is.
I'll say it every day we bring him up. I am very upset about the fact that it appears I'm going to be proven right about him, at least through 5 games. A little bit more of a Roquan Smith creation than we'd all like to admit. Except for me, because I've literally said it from the day they signed him.
Part two?
Second parter here. Now, this is more what I wanted to get into, because this stuff is like catnip for me and also all of the older Steeler fans out there. Pony, I imagine you'll be very interested in this.
Okay.
Hopefully Malsy is, but I know that you and I, we both love to go back and watch...
You're both old souls.
Old historical Steelers moments. So they're honoring the 1974 season, I believe the Sunday night game against the Jets, the team that won Super Bowl IX. The Steelers media crew will debut a Steelers story, The Dawn of a Dynasty, on October 15th. They'll put it on their YouTube page, it appears. I don't know if they're going to put it anywhere else. I don't know if they can. But you go back and see all of the notable names from the past, and I guess even the present. They say present players will chime in here as well with unique Steeler stories. You're texting away. I can't even tell if Pony's listening
to me. No, I am.
Is this something that you're interested in here?
No, I am. I hate to say this. I usually have a bias against against programs or documentaries that are made by the team.
Made by the company that the documentary is about. Like, hey, here's the Vince McMahon story, produced by Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that's why I don't read autobiographies, for the most part. I want someone that's objective.
Who's somebody that you think would write an honest autobiography about themselves?
You.
Well, mine, people would say, man, you're actually, like, being too hard on yourself. Chris Mueller,
I think that's the case. Chris Mueller,
a real piece of garbage.
Everybody hated me.
Don't even know why somebody asked me to write this book. Who gives a rat's ass about me? Would you read a Ben Roethlisberger autobiography, Pony?
No, but I'd read it if a Jane Levy or someone like that wrote a Ben Roethlisberger or a Jeff Pearlman.
Jane Levy?
Yeah, she's written great biographies. Babe Ruth one.
I just thought
Sandy
of Sandy
Koufax.
I thought of Jane Pauley for some reason.
I thought of Eugene Levy.
His son, who was on Blank Creek. I don't know if I can say the name, even though it's not.
I think he was also on it, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good show.
I think they created the show together. I think the whole point of the show was like, hey, let's write a show.
Amanda put me onto a very interesting show, okay, on Netflix. It's called Unreal. Have you guys seen this?
No.
It would be right up Sarah's alley. She'd friggin' love this show.
What's it about?
So it's reality TV.
Hold on.
Uh-oh.
It's a show about, like, a fictional version of The Bachelor, but it's based on the people that worked on the show worked on The Bachelor. So you see the way the sausage gets made, with how they pick people, what the producers do to manipulate the contestants on the show. It's fascinating. Because you figure they just don't like, let's roll cameras here nonstop and just watch these people. The show wouldn't be interesting enough.
Yeah, they have to edit it.
You know why I don't think Sarah would actually like that?
She doesn't want to have the mystique ruined.
Because we always have the argument, because she gets on me about being a pro wrestling guy, which, you know, it's whatever. But I always, like, poke at her side saying, you know, I'm sure your reality TV probably isn't all that much different than what I'm watching. And it isn't. Like, that's really not a secret to anybody. I think watching that, especially with me, would expose it a little bit.
But so, like, the head executive producer thinks, okay, this is my promiscuous contestant. This is the one America's going to hate. Exactly.
Right.
This is the lovable character. These are the people that are going to be rooted for.
Yeah, they're pulling the strings.
Oh, yeah.
The puppet masters.
But feeding them booze and stuff, like lying about what people are actually saying in these interviews to try
it's
to get them.
Fairly shady.
Oh, it's fascinating stuff.
I used to listen to a podcast that Will Sasso did, the comedian, the guy who would do the...
From Mad TV?
Yeah, why don't you tell me, gorilla, it'd be Jesse Ventura. His co-host on the podcast was just like some Hollywood writer, like a guy who just wrote scripts, but that guy had a side podcast, and I kid you not, it was called Game of Roses, that he did with some woman who liked The Bachelor. They figured out what The Bachelor basically would do, the producers would do and look for on social media, because that's how they would like hunt profiles. He would coach people on how to like curate their Instagram feeds to have a better chance of getting on The Bachelor. He got multiple people onto the show.
Yeah, this is part of this whole thing too, the show.
The producers like figured it out and started trying to, like, they didn't know who he was, but they knew these people were being, like, coached on how to get onto reality TV and how to win the game once they got there. Which is, can we just all stop and think of how sick you have to be,
Donnie,
for all of this?
You got to check this out with Sarah, this show. It's called Unreal. Just give it a dabble.
Oh, no.
Watch a couple episodes and see what she says about it.
I'm fine with watching it. I'm saying I think she'd get annoyed at the comments I make. Because I think we will see more and more that our worlds are a bit too similar for her liking.
The Venn diagram.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.